Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Michael and Patty Show. My name is Michael, and my guest, as always,
is Patty.
Patty, you're looking amazing over this giant mound of sound insulation in our new studio.
Yeah, actually, the new studio sounds pretty quiet in here, so I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing what the finished product is like.
So am I. And if you're just tuning in, we're sort of alternating between two studios, one of which is a truck. And then we've got this studio here set up in our office. If you're new to the show as well, basically what we talk about here is Prince Edward Island real estate, everything PEI, and we bring you over 41 years of our full-time, seven-day-a-week experience. The whole objective here is just to educate people on buying and selling real estate on the island.
That makes me kind of feel old.
I remember years ago, there used to be this agency in town, and the agents were very well respected. They're up there in age, and I remember they used to advertise, we have 150 years experience. And we used to refer to that one agent? Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that, because you used to think they wrote their contracts on slate.
Yes, with a chisel. So if you're looking for additional resources on PEI Real Estate, be sure to check out our YouTube channels, our Instagram feeds, threads. We both have a weekly newsletter. We're on LinkedIn. And the government website has some awesome material at gov.pe.ca. And whether you're a tourist or not, check out the tourist site at peiplay.com. The 2025 Tourist Magazine just came out. It's an excellent tool to maneuver the island. Are you still there?
Yes, if you're speaking to me, yes, actually, Prince Edward Island does an exceptional job at promoting the island with some of their platforms and sites.
I thought you drifted off for a minute.
You never know when you're done or not.
How many real estate agents does it take to change a light bulb?
Oh, we're going to do realtor jokes. I don't know.
None. The light bulb's in excellent working condition and comprised of a beautiful retro teardrop illuminator, offering original glass and metal features and located very centrally in the middle of the room. Local amenities abound, and the property is serviced by a newly refurbished power cord connecting it to the ceiling. Nearby is a tasteful power switch to enable the purchaser to switch it on and off. Leasehold with share of power supply with lovingly improved wattage by the current owners would suit a professional couple or a family looking for more light.
Typical realtor trying to sell, not having a light bulb in an outlet.
Everything has a positive spin.
Absolutely. And all the natural light. Who needs to flip on a switch?
We're going to talk about everyone's favorite provincial entity, IRAC, Island Regulatory Appeals Commission, which, if you didn't know, you can check out at irac.pe.ca. That's IRAC. Today, we're going to talk about something new they've come up with, a fantastic new idea. Patty, why don't you share that with us and give us your opinion?
Well, it has not been approved yet. It is something that is in the works. We have until April 18th, 2025. So if you're listening to this after the 18th, hopefully the decision has been made and they rule against agreeing to doing this. So what they're proposing right now is to have the municipalities within Prince Edward Island, those communities that are within a municipality, have been up until now exempt from the Land Protection Act. So a person is allowed to have a land holdings of approximately 5 acres or no more than 5 acres without having to go through the Executive Council for approval to acquire more or 165 feet of water frontage. The municipalities, so if you were to have bought a property within one of these municipalities located around the island, regardless of your land holdings, it was considered exempt. What they're currently looking to do, and the way it is written right now, which makes no sense, is if you are a non-island resident and you are looking to acquire a property within a municipality, regardless of having an existing land holdings or not, you have to go through the Executive Council for approval in order to acquire that property.
In other words, just like if you're buying 5 acres of land or 165 feet of waterfront on an accumulative basis, you would have to go through IRAC. You would have to pay your 1% fee. You'd have to wait. It would have to be an MLS typically for 90 days. So now we're into 90 or 120 days to close, and they may or may not accept the application or approve you. And they will not tell you why if you're being declined. So they're trying to apply that to local residential as well. But some islanders may think that's a great idea up until such time when you're going to sell a house and no one wants to buy it other than a non-island resident and you can't sell it to them.
It doesn't make any sense to me. I do feel that just because a property is within a municipality, if they already have a land holdings of 5 acres or say 4.5 acres and the new property puts them over the 5 acre land holding allotment, then perhaps they should have to go through the executive council and the IRAC approval, but not just to buy a piece of property that might be half an acre within a municipality. Every non-island resident would have to go through this. It makes no sense.
I'm not going to voice my opinion, but I think if I did have an opinion, it would be government needs to stick their nose out of real estate and the capitalistic system, because the same rules federally are now applying to PEI, and they make no sense either with regards to non-Canadians buying property. They've thrown us in the bucket along with Toronto and Vancouver, and we've really never had that issue before.
No, we already have a Land Protection Act. Now we have the prohibition, and now they're looking to incorporate this. What if we have a doctor looking because we've had a shortage of them, and they've agreed to come to Prince Edward Island to provide their services, and they want to live within one of these municipalities? They wouldn't be able to purchase without paying 1% of their purchase price. I just think it's a money grab. That's my opinion.
Oh, absolutely it is. But again, who I feel sorry for is the island resident. Let's just say it's a farmer's wife and she's a widow. The farmer has passed away and she's sitting on a couple hundred acres of land. And the only people that she can find that want to buy that property and pay her top dollar are non-residents, and it gets declined by IRAC. Moving along. Just recently, we've moved from 31 photos to 50 photo allowance on MLS. Does this mean anytime I list a property, I should have all 50 photos there?
I would say no. And I know exactly what you're getting at. I've seen a few of these.
This is something you brought up.
Yes. Over the last month, where realtors they feel they have to populate 50 photos because now we have that much room, and they're putting pictures inside of closets, which should not be. Why do I need to see how people's walk-in closets are all set up? They're taking pictures of utility rooms. They're just going a little bit overboard, in my opinion. There are photos that you can have as B-roll photos where you can just say, if someone's really interested and they're off island and you want to help make it a little bit easier, absolutely, you could send off these additional photos. But to send photos of inside of sheds and inside of basements and closets, it just makes no sense to me. They're not photos that are selling the property, in my opinion.
I don't know what your process is, but when I initially list a property, I usually bring a camera or I use my iPhone. I'll shoot a couple hundred photos of absolutely everything down to the expansion tank for the well or the city services, the breaker panels, the Venmar system, everything. And I refer to those as file pictures. I don't use any of those for marketing the property. I kind of use them to formulate in my mind what the video is going to look at, which is quite common for videographers to take photos and use that sort of as a storyboard, whether it's physical or just in their mind to get an idea how they're going to shoot it in video. But I do not include all of those photos in the listing. What I do have is our professional photographer, which we share. He does the photos, and we want only the best and the brightest photos in that listing. And sometimes that could only be a handful. And in some situations, I've had properties that wouldn't sell because the pictures were sending the wrong message. So in that instance, sometimes they'll just eliminate it down to one. And you'll be amazed at the results you get sometimes, because less is sometimes more. The objective to the photos is to get people to the property to feel it, to get them emotionally tied to it, so they're writing an offer. The idea of the photos is not to just have 10 photos of the utility room, and I don't know what that's going to accomplish, probably not much.
No, and another reason that a realtor would want to take a bunch of photos, like you were saying, of items like the furnace and the electrical panel is we're in and out of a lot of homes all the time, and it's very easy to confuse them and say, is this the house that has the oil-fired furnace? Or
that's why I do them. So yes. When those questions come up, I never, ever have to go back ever again.
Yeah, we're able to quickly draw on our photos, which also then triggers your memory and know this property has this, or here is the number for the oil that it's been tagged for insurance reasons once we get it under contract, or some of the other items like the meter number for Maritime Electric.
So when doing pictures, take a cue from the auto industry. It's all about getting them into the showroom. It's not about trying to sell the property. Next, we're going to get into, and this is another situation you had, and I've had this many times, when potential buyers ask what the assessment value is of a property, and their intention is to formulate an opinion as to whether or not the asking price is legitimate based on the assessment value that the government has established. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I do come across this, and I have for years, because this has been something that has been going on for over 15 years since I've been in real estate on Prince Edward Island, is the tax assessment doesn't align with, and they do have market value assessment. It states right in our tax reports. So a non-island resident would automatically assume, well, that is what the property should be listed at, but that is not in alignment with what our real estate market would end up, you know, awarding or generating as a sale price for that property. So then it requires a lot of education and a lot of extra time trying to explain it. No, you're not overpaying for this property. Our numbers don't make any sense. And I know you were the one, Michael, that shared with me many years ago about how this all came to be as a result of politics.
I guess the question I would have for you, since COVID, prices have gone nuts just about everywhere in Canada, including here. So that house in Charlottetown that used to be $285,000 is now $685,000. Have your taxes gone up by more than 100%?
No, they haven't.
And why do you think that is?
And again, probably to do with politics.
There's a lot of politics wrapped into property taxes. In fact, it was about 25 years ago, I'm guessing, plus or minus, that a politician ran, and this is going by memory back over two decades, and he ran on the premise that property taxes would be frozen for so long, whether it was 4 years or five or whatever. That's why when we look at our tax reports, there's multiple values. That's because they used it as a card to get voted in, and quite successfully so. So the politicians do not want to touch the property taxes, because if they come along and say, hey, by the way, your property taxes just went from $4,000 to $12,000 a year because the value went up, they certainly wouldn't be very popular. And the opponent would probably use that as a playing card and reduce their taxes to get voted in again. That and the fact that the PEI government just doesn't have the manpower to audit every single listing in PEI and have the assessment values reflectively represent the property value. In the past, in the city, Summerside, Charlottetown, Stratford, Cornwall, you could pretty well see they're 10 to 20% below what the property is worth. The country was always whacked. I remember selling properties for $450,000, which at the time was a big number, and the assessment would be $125,000. So just keep that in mind. The assessment value is not really a good guide to what a property is worth. What usually is an objective appraisal, and that's a conversation in itself, or a CMA based on what the directions for the CMA or the appraisal were based on how many days that property is going to sell based on that price. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and just one added point. So in other areas across Canada, properties are reassessed every year. On Prince Edward Island, a property typically is only reassessed every time it exchanges hands or it transacts. So if that property has been in that same property owner's possession for 10, 20 years, that property, aside from just the incremental inflation, hasn't formally been reassessed. And what the province does and takes advantage of is when a property does exchange hands and is sold, they usually, because they have paid access to our MLS system, that is when they will go in and reconcile 100 plus properties that have transacted. Now, typically we sell anywhere from, and these days, 1,800 to 2,000 residential properties a year. So they only pull about 100, maybe 200 properties. They reconcile based on their notes, making sure everything coincides. That is typically the only time a property is reassessed. So other than that, that's why you're going to see some of that staggering difference between when you see a property come onto the market. Check and see when the last time it exchanged hands. If it's been over 5-10 years, that's probably why you're seeing a greater variance, a difference between assessed value and market value.
So are you saying every time a property conveys or is sold, the government doesn't reassess it?
It reassesses at the time of conveyance.
Correct. So one of the things we probably haven't mentioned before, number one, if you're asking what the property taxes are today, I'm thinking in my head, and I don't know about you, I'm thinking, does it really matter? Because it's going to be reassessed anyway. And the second thing is, as a Prince Edward Island resident, you receive approximately a 1/3 tax credit. So the property taxes on that property, number one, they're probably not accurate to begin with unless it was recently conveyed. And number two, are they island residents and are they receiving the discount, which will show on the tax report?
Yeah, and I like how you worded that, Michael, because a lot of people, if you go into different chat rooms, they'll end up commenting and say that Prince Edward Island charges non-residents double taxes and don't buy in PEI, you'll get penalized.
And you know why they don't do that? Why they don't double your taxes? Because it's illegal to charge somebody more, from my understanding, not being a lawyer, based on your proximity. However, it is legal to discount. So that's why they don't tell you you're paying more taxes. What they tell you is when you become a resident, you're getting approximately 1/3 off.
And that's how it, here's the total amount. As an island resident, you are getting, and it does work out to approximately 1/3 discount. And the whole purpose of that is because you're living here, you are supporting and giving back to the economy. Many islanders and island residents you will see out every May, they are very committed. They love their home and their island. They're picking up trash. They're looking after the island and making it pretty for all the tourists and that, because that's where we get a lot of our income from.
Right on. Moving on. I recently received an offer. It was very long. We talked about it in the last podcast. It was in and around 87 pages long, and I just rejected it and sent it back. And then I sat.
You mean your seller rejected it?
Seller rejected. Well, I physically rejected it on behalf of the vendor or the seller. I didn't make that decision. He did. Thank you for the correction. And quite aptly put, we always represent our clients. So this was rejected. No explanation was given, but then I thought, I'm just going to sit and see if there is a response. What do you think happened? Would you do that?
Would I reject it and wait for a response from the
buyer's
agent?
Would you reject it and not give them a reason why you rejected it, just to see if they would question or talk to you as per why it was rejected?
Yeah, that would make sense. I don't feel I owe them an explanation, or that my seller needs to owe them an explanation.
So I sat around for a couple of days, twiddling my thumbs, waiting for the phone to ring to have this conversation with this agent, only to find out they did actually contact me. So I have to give them credit for that. That was a good move. We discussed why the offer was rejected. And because of this communication, we were able to put together an offer that was perfectly written for the vendor and the purchaser, and we signed it as is. Where is, as it sat. We didn't even have to modify it, amend it, counteroffer it, nothing. It was perfect.
Well, that's what realtors should be doing and why...
Communicate.
Communication is so important. And just understanding what is the seller's position, what is the buyer's position, So yes, kudos to that agent for reaching out to you. All too often, you'll see realtors that, you know, will get a little upset. They'll feel that they need to do this competitive negotiating, and it doesn't typically end up working. So if you have a good realtor and they're collaborating, they're communicating, most times those deals, if there is a deal to be had, can be put together.
Collaboration is always a good thing. In this case, this particular agent explained the view of the purchaser. I basically shared the vendor's opinion on why they were wrong, and we wrote an offer that was accepted.
So the buyer was just, that was just it, black and white, the buyers were wrong.
The buyer was discounting the property based on information that he received that was incorrect.
Okay, that makes sense.
And don't get me wrong, I would have followed up, but I just didn't want to negotiate with myself, as you usually put it.
Yes, absolutely.
It's like asking somebody, what do you want for your house or your car? That's okay. But what you don't do is say, I'll pay you this much.
Yes.
I don't know if I put that across. Like if I'm calling you and I say, I want to buy your house, best thing you can say is, well, how much do you want to pay for it? Rather than saying, I'll sell it for this much because I may be at a higher price point than you're going to give me. So you're negotiating with whoever gives the number out first is negotiating with themselves.
And they're the ones that set the first anchor versus waiting to see if I'm approached by a buyer. Yes, tell me what you're willing to pay for it instead of me throwing out a number which might be less than what they were actually willing to pay. And I, not realizing it, lost out on a few thousand or a little bit of money.
Keeping in mind, this is, what is this, the third week of April?
Yeah.
And this is probably going to come out around the third week of May. These numbers probably haven't changed that much, but can you tell me how many active residential listings there are in Charlottetown, Stratford, and Summerside, and what the median price range in those three markets is?
Absolutely, Michael.
I forgot you had the information without looking at the sheet.
It's too late. I've already done it. Charlottetown currently has 110 listings and with a median price of $495,000. And I'm not surprised because that's about what we're seeing. Around $500,000 price point seems to be a median. I wouldn't be surprised if that was close to the average price as well for the Charlottetown market. Stratford, did you want me to do that one?
Carry on.
Stratford has 46 listings, which seems really low, with a median price of $605,000 rounded off. So the inventory seems a little low for Stratford.
And why is that? Why do you how many people are in Stratford?
I don't know what the population is. That's actually a really good question.
And Summerside?
Summerside, about 16,000.
Population of Stratford and Summerside, give or take a few thousands, probably around the same. I'm guessing Stratford's around 12 and Summerside's around 18.
Okay.
16. The number of listings is reflective of the population of that center. Don't quote us on these numbers. We don't have that. So Stratford, 46 listings, and what's the median price?
Was $605,000. And then Summerside also has 46 active listings as of the time of this particular episode, with a median rounded price of $420,000. So Summerside still seems to be where you can get a bit of a deal on a property or more for your dollar if you were to be considering where on Prince Edward Island do we want to settle.
And what governs the price at the end of the day? It's supply and demand. So the demand is heavier in Charlottetown than it is in Summerside.
Yeah. And in Stratford, the reason why in my opinion, why you might see a bit of a higher price point is because most of Stratford are newer homes.
And bigger.
And bigger homes, absolutely. It's more of an upscale kind of suburb kind of community town is what Stratford has going on for it.
Well, you've preemptively answered my next question, which is why are the houses more expensive in Stratford? Typically, the people buying in Stratford are looking for a newer home, would probably be number one on the list, and probably a larger home.
Yeah, and being in a community where you have all similar homes, whereas a lot of communities in Charlottetown, you'll have a mismatch of, you know, split entries, older bungalows. You'll have one that's a real stately looking home. You'll have some that are bigger homes, but they're 50 plus years old. So they're all over the place, whereas you have a little more consistency and continuity in some of the Stratford subdivisions, because they all are newer. About 25, 20 years ago is when you started to see more residential properties. And then about 15 years ago, 16, when I moved to Prince Edward Island, they were about 5 years or so old, these homes were, which it was one of the communities that I was considering relocating to, but they seemed a little costly at that time for me.
And you ended up, despite what your agent recommended, I think she recommended Stratford or Summerside, you ended up in Summerside.
Yes, I ended up in Summerside primarily because that was where the real estate agent's office was located, and they didn't want to drive to Charlottetown and Stratford to show me a bunch of properties. Unfortunately, I did go to Charlottetown and Stratford to look at some, but strategically, they made me feel completely dizzy, and it felt like Charlottetown had no rhyme or reasoning to it. So I did buy in Summerside, and I did reside there for approximately 5+ years.
So if you are looking in Stratford, it's a great place to be, and it's the fastest growing community in PEI.
Yeah.
But it may or may not be for you.
It all depends where you're working too. On Prince Edward Island, depending on if you are going to still be entering into the workforce, we don't, just because of our winters, or once in a while we do have a bad winter, employers don't like to see their employees commuting from the east to the west or the west to the east. So if you're going to be working in around the Summerside area or in the city of Summerside, you might want to stay within 20 minutes, 30 minutes of Summerside. And the same goes if you're going to be working in Charlottetown or Stratford, Cornwall area. You're going to want to be within approximately 30 minutes or so, pushing it 40 minutes of your workplace.
Well, the other thing to consider about Stratford is you have one bridge to access, and it's usually pretty busy during rush hour.
Yeah, you have to allow for additional time. Some people love it. They don't mind. There are, all your amenities can be met in Stratford, but if you are going to be working in Charlottetown and choose to live in Stratford, just certain times of the day, you're going to have to make sure you add about a half an hour, 40 minutes at least to your driving commute.
Couldn't I just buy a car, leave it on the Charlottetown side and one on the Stratford side and use a Sea-Doo to get across?
Well, you could do that, or
a snowmobile in the winter.
Might make sense. Never thought of that. Just to walk across the bridge. Some days you'd probably get across faster than the traffic does.
If you're buying a property, on to another subject. Garbage collection. You should know about this stuff. Garbage collection, where they get their oil from, propane, internet access. That is super important. That's like telephone these, or what used to be like telephone back in the old days. Telephone, snow blowing services, property managers, and mailbox keys. These are all things you should be aware of if you're buying. And depending on whether or not you're working from home, the internet checkbox should have been on the list. But the good thing about PEI is they do have a mission to run fiber to each and every home. The island is covered with multiple services, including Bell Cellular. We've got a number of wireless providers that are private. We've got fiber running a lot of different places, plus we've got Eastlink as well. Anything to add to that?
No, and I would just also just add, along with those services, is just the insurance as well. These are all things, information, if you're a listing agent, you should already know about the property. And if you're a buyer, just do your research. Look at, you know, price, depending on where you're working. Sometimes they offer discounts for some of these services. Mailbox keys is a point of contention that I deal with all the time, and I'm still dealing with on a property that closed approximately a month ago. The correct way that Canada Post would like that done. Please, if you're a buyer, don't assume that the seller is going to hand you the keys over. Canada Post would like that property owner to bring the keys back to Canada Post so that they can close that address or that person's name off of their list. And then as a new property owner, if you were the buyer, you just need to bring in a piece of mail, perhaps a driver's license, or an agreement of purchase and sale to let them know that you have just acquired this property. They will easily register your name to a new mailbox or that mailbox, sometimes change the keys out, and you will be issued a new set of keys. So that is the proper way that Canada Post would like to see your mailbox keys handled if you're not getting mail directly to your door.
Well, it makes sense because if you, as a seller, pass the keys to the buyer, the post office doesn't know that there's new names on that address.
Absolutely. But you wouldn't believe how many times I get between other realtors and other buyer clients reaching out to me directly, frustrated because they've bought a property, it's been a month, and they still haven't received their mail, and no one has advised them otherwise. So if you're listening to this podcast, you will be well-informed and educated as to the process.
If someone was to move here and they were an entrepreneur, how well do you think they would do in basically any business that would be tied to the local economy? So I'm foregoing things that are virtual, like online websites and eBay selling and Amazon selling or online sales. I'm talking, you're coming to PEI and you're going to become an electrician, a plumber, you're going to open up a paint shop or become a drywaller or a lawyer or accountant or a real estate agent. Scale of 1 to 10, how good of an environment do you think this is to move to if you're an entrepreneurial spirit?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I would say if you are a hard worker and are very focused and diligent and want to make a difference on the island, it's almost a blue ocean of opportunity here. In my opinion, you will not, if you're a tradesperson, there is a shortage and you would be in high demand. And I'd say you, 1 to 10, I'd say at least an 8.
I think Prince Edward Island is a great place to do business. And I think as long as you understand the basic concepts behind business, which means you're capitalized, you understand marketing and sales, and you know how to talk to clients, I think you're going to do well. I think PEI is a great place to be as long as you understand those basic concepts. When I moved here in 98, my background was 100% pretty well information technology, computers. There really wasn't PEI. I couldn't do what I did there here, because there's just too much ground to cover. There, I was doing on-site service all over Ontario. Here, it'd be difficult to do that because you can't charge a customer for 5 hours of travel time if you're going to the other end of the island. Where I was located before, there's 35 to 40,000 businesses, probably within a 15, 20-minute drive, if that, maybe 10-minute drive, that I could service. So when I came here, I got into real estate and I said, as long as I have a fax and a phone, I should be able to do okay at just about any business. And here I am 26 years later, is that right? And you're here 15 and you had a
16
nursing
year.
Background. So you too got into business or real estate with no business background in a completely different forte.
Yeah. I find as long as you don't come to Prince Edward Island and if you're a non-resident listening, a non-islander.
Wave your Ontario card.
Yeah, toot your Ontario horn. And I just use Ontario as an example because that's where I'm from. I wasn't received well because I do understand, unfortunately, some Ontarians can come with their big city attitudes and egos, and it's not received well. I didn't have a big city attitude or ego. But unfortunately, I was stereotyped in, and it took a little bit. It was not easy to earn the trust. Now, Prince Edward Island was very different back in 2009, 2010. We've evolved quite a bit here. However, I was a little naive and ignorant and didn't understand island culture and island mentality. And it took a little bit for me to break into being trusted and becoming one of the island residents.
So in that last 26 years that I've been here, and you've been here again 15 or so, technology in real estate has changed a large way. So I thought it would be a good idea, just quickly before we close up this session of our little podcast here, to go over some of the ways that real estate has changed in PEI. So those agents that have gotten into this within the last few years can have more of an appreciation for how much easier things are than they used to be.
You would be a great person to give us an idea of what real estate was like back in the ice age day, Michael, since you've been around for so long here?
I remember back in the Ice Age day, if we needed a map or a survey or anything, we would have to get into our vehicle and we would have to drive to the provincial tax office, or Access PEI as it's known, pay them whatever it was. I think it was like $5 or $2. I can't remember. And we would get a photocopy of something that's been photocopied 50 million times in the last 40 years. We'd have to do that with every property. Now everything's online. Prince Edward Island has some of the best mapping systems I've ever seen. We've got so many tools online, but the best one is GeoLink, which gives us our taxes and all kinds of other stuff mapping. The other thing we have to do, can you imagine this, Patty, because I think this is after your time, presenting an offer in person.
I used to have to present an offer in person.
All our documents were all done in person, including delivering deposit checks. And that reminds me, it's not even on my list. Remember showing properties? You had to go around and pick up keys. So if you're showing five properties, you'd have to go to five different offices, assuming they're different offices, and collect the keys. And inevitably, one agent would be on his way to Moncton and they'd be in his pocket or her pocket. So we don't have to do that anymore because we've discovered state-of-the-art technology called lockboxes.
Yeah, one of the issues with the keys was if there was another showing scheduled, you had to time it to drive back to that real estate office, return the key so that the next agent could have the key and then keep with your schedule and showing the next property.
And we're going to have to wrap the last ones up real quick because we're getting over a lot of time here. So I'll just rhyme them off here. E-transfers. So everything can be done electronically between e-transfers and wires. We have 50 pictures. When I started, you had one and it was in black and white. Video, that's only been something new within the last decade or so that's been popular. Drones, mapping I mentioned. We've got attachments to listings. We didn't have that before. So now there's actual documents, if an agent cares to look for them, attached to the listing. And everything is instant. How many times do you actually have to go and meet a client in person in an office anymore to write up an offer? No, you do it all digitally. You send it via .loop or DocuSign or whatever you use, and Bob's your uncle. So thank goodness for technology, which is my background that I've always loved and I've always told people, including yourself, because you had a technological challenge today, I think. Learn computers. They're your friend. Maybe you can teach my father that.
Teach your father about technology. Yes, I don't think your father is very technology savvy or interested in even learning.
He's too busy.
He's too busy to check his
emails. I have no idea what he does all day, but he's too busy.
Thank you for listening to the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, the Prince Edward Island podcast that guides and navigates you through the buying and selling of PEI real estate. And a little bit of fun facts in that about Prince Edward Island. We appreciate each and every one of you for downloading and listening in and educating yourself and making, when I do meet with some of our listeners, they are so well informed. They're so easy to work with because they're telling me what's coming next. So thanks for listening. And until next time, have a great day.
And if this information is helpful to you, please take the time to follow or subscribe to the show. Give us a 5-star rating, some feedback, because that will tell the podcast or internet universe that we exist. Have a great day. Thanks again for listening.